etched onto the pages of history in elegant cursive handwriting. The confession recorded the story of a sensational 1929 murder which tore apart late colonial Punjab. Spurned by his teenage love, a young Lahore carpenter had walked into a shop in Anarkali Bazaar and sought redemption by plunging his knife into a man's heart. In a gesture likely to delight Freudian forensic psychologists, the killer took 1 rupee from his mother to buy the dagger and then concealed it in the nifa or waistfold of his shalwar. Today, the murder is remembered somewhat differently. A mausoleum in Lahore's Miani Sahib graveyard celebrates the sacrifice of Ghazi Ilmuddin Shahid, the holy warrior martyred to avenge blasphemy against the Prophet Muhammad. Large numbers of blasphemy murders in Pakistan, among them the assassin of Punjab politician Salman Taseer, have invoked Ilmuddin's memory. His father, the left-wing poet Muhammad Din Taseer, was among those who led the funeral procession that buried Ilmuddin in Lahore. As India struggles to make sense of the murder of Kanhaiya Lal Teli, the confession Ilmuddin made holds out an important lesson. The mind of the religious fanatic inhabits a dark wilderness at the frontiers of passion and insanity. For decades, the discomfiting Punjab police case diary, recorded by police inspectors Saeed Ahmad Shah, Sardar Pratap Singh and Johar Lal, has lain inside the Punjab archives in Lahore and is also available online. It is hard to imagine that none of Ilmuddin's many hagiographers discovered this document, the only legal paper in which the illiterate blasphemy murderer can be heard in his own voice. In a magisterial essay on how the myth of Ilmuddin was manufactured, scholar Hashim Rashid noted there were good reasons for hagiographers to ignore this text. From a political point of view, he suggests, their contents would have caused a scandal. That's true. The bizarre story involving homoerotic passion hacks at cherished beliefs about a man who's become a venerated national martyr in Pakistan. Little in Ilmuddin's confession casts him as being engaged with the great communal currents unleashed after Rangila Rasool, an incendiary book which attacked the Prophet's sexual morality. 5 months before communal riots broke out at Lahore in 1927, in the wake of the author being acquitted by the High Court, Ilmuddin said that he had left for Multan to help his father make furniture for a hospital. Then, after a brief 1 week break in Lahore, Ilmuddin left again, this time to work in Kohat. Ilmuddin returned to Lahore in late 1928. There's nothing in his confession to suggest that he encountered any religious instruction or movements before or after this time. The author of Rangila Rasool, Mahashay Rajpal, had been arrested in 1924 after Muslim protests. The case, however, dragged on until 1927, when he was finally acquitted. In response to large-scale communal violence, the government had enacted Section 295A, which proscribes speech with, and I quote, deliberate and malicious intent to outrage the religious sentiments of any class. The earlier Section 153A only prohibited the promotion of enmity between communities. There was nothing about hurt sentiments. Hindu politicians, historian Julius Stevens has recorded, were less than enthusiastic about this new law. Lala Lajpat Rai supported it, but only as a temporary measure to satisfy some hypersensitive folk. Large numbers of pop histories, blogs, books, movies, beginning with a 1978 hit starring the impossibly good-looking Haider as the Lahore carpenter, all insist Ilmuddin had passionate religious beliefs since childhood. These accounts uniformly have him learning of the blasphemy in 1929 and immediately deciding to take vengeance. In the confession, though, there is evidence that Ilmuddin had long known of the blasphemy issue and even encountered Rajpal personally, but wasn't particularly interested in this issue. During his 1927 visit to Lahore, Ilmuddin recalled hearing, I quote, that a Hindu shopkeeper of Anarkali had published a book called Rangila Rasool against the Holy Prophet, for which he was prosecuted but acquitted, which excited the feelings of the whole Mohammedan community. This information, however, did not impel Ilmuddin to act. About 1¾ years ago, Ilmuddin went on to his police interrogators, "I heard a news given in a newspaper that Khuda Bakhsh, a kebab seller of Lahore, made an attempt to murder that Hindu who had escaped and Khuda Bakhsh was convicted." Again, this information about Khuda Bakhsh does not seem to have impacted Ilmuddin's life in any way. Indeed, the confession suggests Ilmuddin had actually seen his victim several times before the killing and was unmoved by the sight. In 1928, Ilmuddin had run into his friend Bassa Jatt, who had come to Anarkali Bazaar to have posters printed announcing a wrestling competition at a local fair. Bassa, Ilmuddin recalled, pointed me out that Hindu sitting in his shop where some constables were present in order to keep watch, he recorded. Ilmuddin saw the Hindu several times again. On the evening of Shab-e-Barat in 1928, on his way to a visit to Lahore Zoo, and when he visited the studio of Girdhali Lal together with his friend Deen Muhammad to be photographed. The thought of violence never seems to have crossed his mind though. So what did happen? Ilmuddin's confessional account centers on his, I quote, friendly terms with Sadiq Kasab, nicknamed Haji, an adolescent boy living in Lahore's Sinawali Bazaar. A few days before Eid, Haji stopped speaking to Ilmuddin and also refused to accompany him to the famous fair of Chiraga, held to mark the death anniversary of the medieval Punjabi poet and Sufi Shah Hussain. To his dismay, Ghulam Nabi, another carpenter living in Sirawala, claimed, and I quote, that he had committed sodomy on Haji. The next day, Ilmuddin told the police, he confronted both Haji and Ghulam Nabi at a pawn shop owned by his friend Deen Muhammad. "Ghulam Nabi denied to have told me any such story, whereupon I slapped him," Ilmuddin recalled. A brawl broke out. After the quarrel had taken place, Haji had told me that he could not now bear my sight, even he did not want to speak with me. This shocked me very much and I felt myself tired of the world. The next morning, Ilmuddin and his friend Jatta, a painter, hired a tanga or horse cart, and I quote, with a red horse belonging to a Mohammedan of emaciated body. They visited Lahore's Golden Mosque. Then the two men visited Hira Mandi, Lahore's sex work district, where he talks about meeting with a person named Fauji of Lahore, I quote, who had also called out to us. In the course of the tonga ride home, Ilmuddin told Jatta he was considering killing himself and Haji. Although Jatta backed the idea of killing Haji, he observed that, I quote, people would say that I had destroyed my life for the sake of a villain. The same night when I went home, I was tired of life, Ilmuddin told the police. I thought that if I were to put an end to my life, I should better do it to vindicate the Holy Prophet's honor by doing away with the said Hindu and thus get martyrdom. In the morning, Ilmuddin washed, went to the barber for a shave, and drank a glass of sattu for breakfast. He met Deen Muhammad and Haji in the bazaar. I told them that I was going to Kohat and they should excuse me if anything bad had been spoken by me, he remembered. This young son of a carpenter, the poet laureate of Pakistan, Muhammad Iqbal, would later lament, has surpassed us, O educated ones. Ilmuddin, though, the court documents show, was a pretty reluctant martyr. At his trial, the carpenter pleaded innocence and his defense focused in the contradictions in statements of witnesses. Local notables hired Muhammad Ali Jinnah, the founding father of Pakistan, but for a fee of 18,000 rupees to argue the appeal in the High Court. His case, though, wasn't that Ilmuddin was a holy warrior, it was that he was wrongly accused of the crime. You see, in the months since Section 295A was passed, communal tensions had stilled in Punjab and many feared Rajpal's murder would ignite violence again. Following the hanging of Ilmuddin though, the blasphemy murder was appropriated by intellectuals who supported the Pakistan movement. The era of Islamist-leaning military ruler General Muhammad Zia-ul-Haq saw Ilmuddin's reinvention as a model citizen of the Islamic Republic with his religion at the center of his being. when the body of Ilmuddin was exhumed from its grave, one modern online hagiography claims, vesting in him the miraculous attributes of the martyr, the body was found to be intact without any change whatsoever. For centuries, asylum doctors and medical writers had discussed strange crimes they thought were driven by what was called moral insanity. The acts of otherwise clear-thinking individuals, impelled by their affliction into desperate acts beyond their voluntary control. Today, a criminal lawyer might well point to the burden of sexual guilt and depression borne by Ilmuddin to argue he was mentally ill. Maybe that would be the truth. The illness, though, would be one that implicates an entire society. Ilmuddin's act ignited fires which a century on still rage in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and beyond. I'm Praveen Swamy, and I'm National Security Editor of The Print.